This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Let's break it down. There has been a lot more that has taken place in the trial of Karen Reed since we last talked with Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. So I just kind of want to start where things are at right now. Uri was on the stand, Bukenik, and he's been on there for a while, several days as of us recording this. And one of the last things that he did at the end of week three, I think it was reading off those text messages between Karen Reed and fill me in. I always forget his name. Higgins. Yeah, between Brian Higgins. The very fifth grade level romance that seemed to be blossoming there. I like you. You're hot. You too. Why did the defense think it was a good idea to read those aloud in court? I mean, Karen Reed is their client. I'm not quite grasping where this was a good idea. What are your thoughts?
Well, what they were thinking is they needed to try to paint the groundwork for that there's evidence that he could be a third-party culprit and had some sort of motive to kill John. The problem is, I think it really blew up. This doesn't look like some "you're my woman and no one will have you," Someone in jealous rage. This is somebody who's being pursued by their defendant.
Yeah.
It's all really slimy and cringy. And quite frankly, the last text is her texting him, not him texting her.
Mm-hmm. They knew what these texts were. We saw them in the previous trial. What world are they living on where this looks like a third party culprit that's jealous and rageful and out there to protect this woman in his life? That's not even the woman in his life, really, other than when they're drinking at a bar. Is this a case of blinders on and they just have heard so much hype from their own people of like, look how horrible this is. And then when you take 10,000 feet overview of it, you're like, oh, well, only in this corner does it look this bad. Everybody else is out here going, are these children? Is this from like a children's text back and forth in fifth grade? Because I didn't even think anyone would get in trouble for most of this. It's just, it's very, very tame.
Yeah, I think there's a combination here, Tony. I've thought about this a lot when they're in their strategy room, you know, sticking with the dog as an example. Yeah. I think I just would have taken that off the table. I don't know. They didn't take the 17-year-old off the table. It was taken off the table for them. And remember what Judge Cannone said with the third-party culprit? She said, basically, there is barely a sliver, barely enough for me to even consider them staying on the table. Mm-hmm. So they've got to put something on the table for at least some consideration. And there's nothing there before this. And now they're at least trying to point out that they were working on a hookup. That's about all I gleaned from that. And it just shows not only is she possibly a murderer, she's definitely a cheater.
Yeah. And it wasn't even him trying to make the hookup happen. It was her. Flat out saying, you know, we're both single. Like, I'm sorry, Karen, you're not. You're in a committed relationship. At least that's what everyone else in the world seemed to understand other than you, the woman in the relationship. And this went on for weeks while supposedly, you know, things are okay with John. I know they've been arguing and it was probably getting to the end, but she wasn't single. That's clear. And seemed to have no shame about any of it. As well. And they've now introduced some talk of Aruba, which I found her verbiage on it rather interesting. She's already, and it's another Karen Reed speaking out of her mouth in two different ways. We've already seen in one interview her talking about Aruba, and it was a misunderstanding. I saw this woman talking to John, and yeah, I thought something was happening, but then it turned out it wasn't, and I felt bad, and I apologized. So she's already come to the realization that it wasn't this horrible, he's cheating with this woman at the bar. She knew that it wasn't that. But she's using it to her advantage in those texts to be a victim. She's telling him, oh, John hooked up with somebody. Like, just giving a half-truth completely about the whole thing, only so it benefits her and makes him maybe feel bad for her, how bad John is. It's complete manipulation. Not to say that that makes her a murderer, but it certainly shows a lot of the depths she'll go to manipulate people to get what she wants.
Well, and it wasn't even a half-truth.
No.
It was strictly, see, look at me, John's been bad, so it's okay if I'm bad with you.
Yeah.
That's exactly what her point was from that. And, you know, I really hope they introduce the Aruba testimony.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're not going to. That's what I've heard.
There was a motion today, I believe, that came out this morning about it. Yeah.
Did it come in? Oh, thank goodness, because I hadn't seen anything on it. I thought, oh my gosh, they're not going to introduce it. Oh, that's great news, Tony, because it's so critical.
Yeah.
You know, I just reviewed the testimony from last trial. I mean, the lady's in tears. It wasn't her just saying, I mean, she's screaming at her, F you.
Yeah.
Like, who does that?
Yeah.
You know, when you think somebody you're dating is talking to another girl, it's so volatile and so anger driven and so out of social norms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she operates.
Yeah.
And I really think it's important they get it in to show she's psychotic when it came to her jealousy involving John.
It's all about her own image. And at the end of the day, once you can understand that and you can, and I can't say, I don't know if she's a narcissist, but she certainly presents with a lot of narcissistic traits. And it's all about image. It's all about how am I going to look in this moment? And it's about perceived image as well, perceived threats, perceived disrespect. That's a big thing with folks like this, you being disrespectful to me. It's a perceived thing. Even though John wasn't doing that, she perceived it that way. And because she felt that way, then she felt justified, it seems, in trying to go out and do this thing with one of John's cop friends. It's weird, but that's how they operate. It doesn't have to be real. They just have to perceive it, and then they're going to operate as if it was real. And even in her own words, in one of the interviews, she basically bounces from, and then there was the Aruba trip, and then all the stuff started happening with, damn it, I keep forgetting his name.
Higgins.
I don't know why I always forget the name Higgins. Higgins, I got to think of it. Magnum PI, Higgins. That this was happening. So she connects the dots in her own interview of it's a cause and a reaction. Cause and effect here of she perceived he did this at Aruba, so she reacted this way in her own words. And that's, what else are you doing that to, Karen? What other areas of your life do you perceive this, and so you're going to act this way? The Aruba stuff would be very interesting. I do think they opened the door to it. As of our recording, the judge has not decided of what's going to happen, but the fact that these texts are out there, that's how the door got opened last time, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, you just can... I think the door's already been opened on the harassment issue, too, and they're just not stepping through it. Brennan was very clear that he was not going to try to go in that direction. And I know it's because he's trying to make it cleaner this time.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the facts that show she hit John.
Yeah.
That's, to me, his narrative. And he doesn't like necessarily going in these different directions.
Mm-hmm.
But he needs to on this one, I think, to show the length of her not acting correctly. What did you think about the flip off of Buchanan? Clear bird she gave. I think it's funny they're trying to show the picture of Canoni steadying her pen in both. Is I think Canoni, and then I think they have Brennan too, where that's how they hold their pen, and they're steadying it so their middle finger is out a little bit.
Sure.
Compared to the clear bird we see with the two. Right, you know, the fingers down and the bird extended. I mean, anybody who watched it, not just looked at the picture, she flipped him the bird. She's no impulse control.
Yes. And about the maturity level of those text messages. I mean, it's like something a fifth grader would do when they're being called out on something that they don't want to hear, that their own writing, what they actually said is being called out. We have it here. Here's the proof. You can't get away from it. Oh, I don't like that. I'm going to give you the finger. You deserve it. Like, what are you doing? Like, what do you think that's really hurting? You know, who's ever reading this on the stand? It wasn't even Higgins on the stand reading it this time. Why? Yeah. I mean, you're flipping off Yuri. Okay, good. Good job. Does that make you feel good, Karen? Because it's not a good look for you, but she doesn't seem to get her perception or what other people are thinking of her, other than the ego bath, in her own words, that she likes to walk by every day. It's a shame it's only like five people these days, so it's kind of an empty bath, like the water's gone and you're sitting there in the cold. But I guess it's something, Karen, right?
You know, Tony, when you look back at all the different, and I have so many clips of them, the facial expressions, the anger she's shown, her eyes almost coming out of her eye sockets in some of these pictures. And I'm not manipulating them.
No,
I'm literally taking a screenshot with my cell phone and that's it. Mm-hmm. So you can see what she's doing in court. And I just keep wondering if she is convicted and if they announce guilty, I literally think she might jump on top of Alan Jackson and just try to strangle him or just, I mean, I really, there's nothing I wouldn't expect of this woman.
It'll be like that, the Taylor Shabusiness case in Wisconsin where she's flipping out and attacking her attorney that we saw last year. I don't know. I mean, I think anything is possible, with any of this. What I'm wondering is, okay, so she's convicted, she goes to jail. What happens here then with the relationships that she's forged along the way? What happens with her and the blogger? Like, does this turn into a romance? Does this turn into like pen pals? Does this turn into, you know, let's have a special visit? I don't know, because there's not going to be a lot of options. Although, you know, people will probably still want to write her. But it's, yeah, I don't know that she's going to handle that well. And by her own words, she said she's not going to handle that well. And who would? I mean, you're fighting for your life here. I get that aspect of it. But the more we look at this, it's like you're doing this at the cost of all these other people because you've introduced this story that is so fantastical and just literally impossible to take place of 50 plus people all conspiring against you. If you think 50 plus people are conspiring against you specifically and you're no one special, the only person who thinks they're that special is that person.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, the only time in the ID discovery, the only time she got emotional and sad was talking about what is she going to do if she has to say goodbye to all of this, her attorneys fawning over her, her fans, all of this. That's when she got emotional. What happens when she's going to have to say goodbye or if she has to say goodbye to this? And, you know, Tony, one point I wanted to bring up is I don't understand how all these attorneys are even doing this. Where's their caseload? How are they paying the mortgage if they're supposedly not getting paid, which is what they have said? Who puts their life on hold for 2 months and doesn't get paid for any of their work? None of this makes sense.
I mean, I'm going to guess they got some money in the bank to just kind of float for a little bit would be my guess. And they're going to take the publicity out of this and say that that's worth a hell of a lot more than anything Karen Reed is going to pay them. I'm going to guess that's probably where that is at. I still want to know where the hell the money's going. Now, I mean, I believe I could be off on this, but I had seen some of the fundraising. I think they're close to like $1 million that has been raised for the defense fund. And I say that in air quotes of Karen Reed, who says, I'm not paying anyone. So where is this all going? Is she taking care of the lodging for the attorneys and the meals? Because again, still not going to add up to $1 million.
Well, I tell you that the piece that does kind of give me a little bit of a smile here is the fact that the irony that ARCA is probably taking $250,000 or more of all that money.
True.
and the irony of the whole thing, because I think they're so disreputable. I've said this from the beginning. They did not consider, I'm just talking about facts. Mm-hmm. They did not consider all of the inculpatory information and just are going with X's and O's of he's there and this is the speed. And how many times have we seen in how many cases, you know, that exactly what happens, maybe you can't make it say X is an O mm-hmm. on a chalkboard, but it's what happens. Mm-hmm. It's the, you know, especially with car wrecks, I've seen the most unbelievable things happen mm-hmm. Where people live, where people shouldn't have been dislodged from the car. And yet everybody can't believe she could clip him and that he could fall back and hit his head, which is the logical thing that makes sense. So ARCA, I think if they really did that report and everything, they're probably getting paid. They got paid over $20,000 just to come down for a day and testify.
Yeah.
This is hundreds of thousands potentially. Remember, not the FBI, DOJ paid for the first report, but now they want mm-hmm. another, and they want different, you know.
The term I'm hearing from so many people is follow the science. Follow this, and the only science that they seem to be sitting on is ARCA. What about follow her statements? She's the one on trial. Follow what she said. But people are questioning that. And it's not just like the statements that are made in the heat of the fog of war while all this is going on. I can find some grace there and go, okay, everybody's in a crazy spot right here. People are saying random stuff. I don't know how credible that's going to be at the end of the day, but she's repeating it for months and years later. And that's where it gets to like, okay, this wasn't just a one-off thing, but the science is what everybody is saying. Let's focus on that science. Tell me in a little bit more detail where you think the ARCA science is off and how that's going to be handled by the prosecution.
Yeah. Let me say, these science is what should be focused on. Mm-hmm. And this is the science we have.
Yeah.
We have John's DNA on taillight pieces. We have taillight pieces that are embedded in his clothing from that impact mm-hmm. that he suffered. We have one of his hairs that was stuck on the back tail of the car. We have a dent in the car. We have the location of the body not moving pursuant to digital science, if you will. That's the science. And for anybody who's doing a report like ARCA to ignore that mm-hmm. and just have hypothetical, and that's the important piece to remember, hypothetical X's and O's you put on a chalkboard mm-hmm. doesn't hold any weight with me unless you factor in the real science of the DNA.
Yeah, I think there's that certainly. I know another big argument has been the taillight pieces of how are there all these little ones shattered there too. And I've seen like some reconstruction, and I say that in air quotes, done as well. Usually it looks like in somewhat warm weather. I think a lot of people fail to forget how cold it was that day. And when you have plastic and it shatters in extremely cold weather, it makes smaller pieces because it's frozen. And when you hit something that's frozen, it goes into many more tiny pieces than it does when it's not. I think that explains a lot of that. I don't know. I mean, it's just common sense to me, really, why this happens or how it happened and why they didn't see it. Because everybody was walking on a crime scene. This was at the grass level. And then it froze. People walked over the crime scene. That becomes a sheet of ice and more snow on top of it. So it does take some time to get to that. Again, a lot of things, I think, being explained in a very palatable way by the prosecution that was not done in round one. The Ring video, another piece that is starting to get some question here. It does appear that there were quite a few pieces of Ring video that were allegedly deleted off of John's security system, except for the one clip that we do see, you know, Karen pulling in, pulling out, hitting the car or bumping the car with the bumper to bumper. But somehow we're going to say it's taillight, even though it's physically not taillight. What do you think about that? Where do you think that's going to go? And what do you think we're going to find out if we get the Ring folks on the stand to explain what happened to John's mystery Ring account?
Oh, I think it's going to be very interesting. And when you combine that to what Mrs. Peggy O'Keefe said. You know, basically she went in, she ran upstairs, beelined upstairs, mm-hmm. at least according, right? That's the testimony. And then left after that with a few articles, right? I think mm-hmm. it was like a small bag or something of her quote unquote things. And that's where the ring equipment was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just looks bad, you know.
But she can do it on her phone. She could have done it anywhere. I'm curious because I'm going to think we're going to see timestamps from Ring as to when these things were deleted. I mean, it could have been Karen dumping them that morning after everything. She could be in the hospital doing it. She could be anywhere doing it, really.
That's true. And I have Ring, and you're right.
Yeah.
You can do it from anywhere. That's true. You don't have to be on the computer to do it. It's yeah. true. But nevertheless, what did she really do up there? The whole thing was just so odd that you wouldn't beeline toward the kids, that you wouldn't beeline and mm-hmm. hug Peggy. I mean, these people had been in her life for over 2 years,
yeah.
and John said. But you're right. It could have been done. I can't wait to see that timeline. My whole thing is, as I'm sure you're thinking, who else had the motive? Oh, and by the way, didn't you think it was interesting when Bill Reed is outside looking for something in
yeah,
the snow?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. After her statement that she sprinkled parts of the...
I know.
I mean, come on.
I feel bad for him in a way, and I don't, because, I mean, as a parent, I get it. You know, and you're a parent too. You'll do almost anything for your kids, and at that moment in time, there's a lot of chaos going on. And I just wonder how he's feeling now, now that all the pieces are out there. He's heard everything she has to say, including by his own words that Karen said she believed she hit something, because he gave that interview to one of the local ABC affiliates, and that's out there. But somehow that, you know, I guess he's lying, or I guess he's making that up. Why would he say that if she didn't say it? That incriminates Karen, something I'm sure he probably regrets saying now. But again, it's just another piece to this puzzle of even her own dad has said things that incriminate her. I don't know why there's so much question here as to what Karen thought happened. It only changed once an attorney got involved and said, huh, maybe you didn't do it. This spooky man came into my office the other day and said, look at the people in the house. So we dropped everything and we looked at the people in the house and, oh my gosh, it's the wizard. Like, where? That seemed like something out of a movie of you get this mysterious guy giving you the tip, even though the tip's very vague. Somehow that moves your whole line of the defense to this story. That... Is that it? Is that the only reason they went with this story? Because weird guy shows up and says, look at people in the house?
Well, you're hunting for anything at that point. You've got to find some way to find somebody else that killed John.
Yeah.
Because, but my whole thing was, why did they have to even go there? Why couldn't they have gone with, he fell in the ice.
Mm-hmm.
He fell back and he hit his head and the glass ended up cutting his arm because he had it in his hand and
yeah.
his hand fell and crashed on that arm and caused those shards to scrape him or something along that line. Why did they have to try to incriminate Jen McCabe and all these others when they could have gone with something that made also plausible sense? She left him there. He left. He literally was drunk. He slips. He's got two glasses, right? We know now that was her. That was his. And that's what cut him. And it was completely an accident.
Yeah.
Why couldn't he have gone there? But no, this elaborate. And I thought they might change it in between trials.
Yeah.
I thought they might come to their senses, but they didn't.
No. I mean, it's a plausible theory. If they went down that road, I think Karen Reed would be a free person today. I don't think any of this would be going on, because I think people would look at this, reasonable people would look at this and go, this is a horrible accident. Yeah, you were drunk. You got to be culpable for that. Can we completely, without a doubt, prove that you hit him? I mean, now I think you can. But at that moment in time, had all these documentaries not been done, had she not opened her mouth 1,000 times and all this crazy stuff, I think she could have probably gotten off because she wouldn't have incriminated herself that much more that she already has. It doesn't make any sense as to why they just didn't go down that road, other than they went down it, they dug in too deep, and now they can't get out of it. So we got to keep going down the road that we painted for ourselves. And it just doesn't work, mainly because Karen kept talking. The fact that Karen again said the other day outside of court, "I saw him go into the house." Why?
What story are you on, Tony? Five?
Yeah, we're beyond five. You saw him go into the house now, Karen. Okay, well, you do realize you're on tape saying every other version of this, and you didn't say you went into the house for the first, or he didn't go into the house for the first several days. If that's what you saw, why would that not be the thing you said? Why is this only coming up later? Why, every other thing was, could I hit him? Did I hit him? I hit him. Told her dad she thought that she struck something. But somehow that couldn't have been John O'Keefe, even though he's the dead guy behind your car in the cracked taillight with taillight embedded in his clothes. Gee, that seems like something that's impossible, that you didn't hit the man with the taillight in his clothes. That's probably the thud you heard, Karen. That's probably the something you hit that you told your dad about that morning.
I let him off, and I thought he ran off after me. That was the reaction I was hoping to garner.
That too. The reaction I was hoping to garner. So she's still trying to manipulate him in that very moment.
It's something. You know what? I just hope people really look at facts. What happens is nobody's really paying attention to the facts, yeah, and they just make it up as they go. At least that's what I'm seeing online.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. The one I saw most recently, Tony, and this one infuriated me because, again, it's going after a 17-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. They said, well, it was, everybody knows that he was killed inside, and it was only when Karen Reed came that everybody was so happy that they could divert who did it onto her. And I was like, well, no one disagrees that that's how John got there. So how did y'all kill him? And then you were happy when Karen showed up, because then you could say, you know, then it could be looked at as she hit him. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They have timeline all jacked up, and people ran with that. And I thought, oh my gosh.
It's such fantastical thinking. And for whatever reason, we are in a place right now in our country where fantastical thinking seems to be the way of life. Facts don't matter. People's own confessions, their own admissions don't matter. All that matters is what you want to believe. And once you've decided that, it must be true. And there's no backing down from it. And it's spooky. It really is spooky. I get why people are saying this is very culty, because it feels very culty when you suspend any objective opinion or belief because you have to go one way and believe a certain thing. I saw something the other day where they're like doing a morning pledge or some sort of shit like that to Karen, and their mission of what they're going to spread the news of. Tell me that's not culty or a little weird.
Oh, that pledge thing was so funny. I actually saw them say they were going to do I think it was that they were supposed to say a prayer, and they started with the Pledge of Allegiance, or they were supposed to do the Pledge of Allegiance and they did a prayer. Not knowing the difference between the two was the point of it. It was so funny. I posted it. But the bottom line is, Lord knows what they're praying or pledging and to whom.
It all seems like fifth grade. Karen's communication seemed like fifth grade. These people seem like they're in fifth grade. Everyone was stunted, and they're all like reliving recess, except John's dead, and there's no bell to call them back into the school to have some common sense.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.